On today's Josh Nason's Punch-Out, we bid adieu to the summer of 2022 as part of our Pro Wrestling Year in Review series, wrapping up with August. And helping me do that is first-time guest of Fightful, Kate Elizabeth. Kate and I talk all about the month. We really focus on AEW a lot because this month saw the return of CM Punk, and a title match that we thought was going to initially happen at All Out actually happened on Dynamite that helped lead to things that happen at All Out. We talk about that, the return of Kenny Omega, the Thunder Rosa controversy, all the issues with contract tampering and all that stuff. And then we flipped to WWE, which was quiet except for signings. Insert picture of Triple H's Infinity Gauntlet with all these names and faces returning. Johnny Gargano, Karrion Kross, Hit Row, and more. We talk all about that. Of course, the news and NXT, with NXT Europe coming and NXT UK dying a quiet death. Impact Wrestling, Japan, the Indies, Road Dogg trying to get hired everywhere. All that stuff and more on today's Josh Nason's Punch-Out with a look at August 2022 with Fightful's Kate Elizabeth. Enjoy. Well, the year interview series continues here on WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, Josh Nason's Punch-Out. We take a stop in August, and as I look out my window, it's the weather is a lot not Augusty, I guess we'll put it that way. And also the same for my guest in cold weather as well. She is you can hear her all the time on various Fightful podcasts, both on audio and YouTube form, and all kinds of other things as well. She's been a past guest on Wrestling Observer Live with Andrew Zarian. Kate Elizabeth here. Kate, thank you for joining us and your first member of the First Timers Club. I like it.
I know. I'm so excited to be here. Wrestling Observer holds a really special place in my heart. Well, before I worked at Fightful, I met Dave on the Jericho Cruise, and he was so awesome when I got to meet him and see Wrestling Observer live in such a unique environment. So I was like, man, that seems like a cool way to make a little bit of a living there. Now here I get to be. So very excited to be joining you today for sure.
That's great. So for those that may have not heard you before, maybe not seen one of the shows that you do or familiar with on Twitter, when did you get into the business? Really, like last few years, correct?
Yeah, so I had a Wednesday night podcast that I started called The Mark Order that was just kind of during the pandemic and the beginning of AEW. A couple of friends of mine started, and then I did what now I affectionately refer to as my dark match with Sean Ross Sapp. We did a prediction show about a year and a half ago, and then there was an opening for Friday nights, and he brought me on for the AEW Rampage and SmackDown review show, and then I got brought on to Tuesdays because it's a very different flavor. We call it a variety hour now more than even a review show because it's just like very fun, very silly, a little bit more off the rails than your typical review show. So it's been a really fun and wonderful and delightfully weird experience, especially with many of the events that we'll talk about from the past year. This has been a very chaotic year in wrestling.
Certainly so. Has been.
Fun to cover, for sure.
There's never a dull moment. As we're talking, as of an hour ago, Mandy Rose released from WWE. And, of course, this comes on the heels of yesterday. Vince McMahon, he's got some legal things to deal with, of course. But then also he's talking about making a comeback to WWE. I mean, literally, there's not like a day. Some Sundays, I think, can get pretty quiet. But it seems like every day there's like something else. You know, it never stops.
It's been crazy. Like I've heard Sean say, and I agree, like, I don't even know if Stone Cold coming back to wrestle at WrestleMania is a top 10 story for the year. Like that's insane. That's crazy. So
unbelievable.
Definitely one of the more chaotic years that I can remember. And I think the rise of AEW certainly contributed to that in a lot of ways.
100%. So we're going to focus this time around on August. And obviously August went over, 485 different headlines. I scanned through all those to kind of pare down this list. And it's a labor of love. I'll tell you that much. It's going through all these. It's crazy. So much stuff. And so much stuff doesn't make the list. And I always tell people this, that, you know, I don't go over like Raw results or anything like that. And there's all these like different title matches and things that happen and weird storylines and things like that. It's kind of more of the bigger stuff, but there's so many other like week to week, day to day things that happen just on the shows that we watch that never make these lists. And yeah, I remember that came to mind because last year, I remember the Nia Jax, the whole like my whole thing. Do you remember that? Like she took the bump and that whole weird thing, like that didn't even make the list, but it's just kind of one of those weird things that happened that never makes you. This is a crazy thing that we spend so much time watching, isn't it?
It really is. And it is, I think, because wrestling's so complex and weird too. Like it can be something that's on screen. It can be something that's off screen. It can be something that has been brewing for months that culminates in the month that we're talking in. Right. So it's such a wonderfully weird little business. And that makes for year in reviews pretty daunting. Don't envy you going through everything, especially of all the years this year. But
yeah,
August was a fun month to talk about. That's for sure.
So let's start. So this month, we're going to start with AEW. Obviously, the Vince stuff has taken over the past couple months leading off. But we're going to start with AEW because this is kind of the beginning of the end of the, we think, of CM Punk's run in AEW. Never assume, again, the craziness we talked about, who knows what could happen a couple months from now. But this led with CM Punk returning from his injury, his foot injury on AEW Dynamite, confronting Jon Moxley in a title unification match, which we assume was going to be happening at All Out primarily. All of a sudden, the next segment, they said, we're going to make this match for next week on Dynamite, which is a big surprise, obviously just coming at this point in the month, just a few weeks before All Out. During this promo, Punk did the infamous Hangman Page call out, and that obviously didn't happen. There was a whole, obviously, story about that. It was obviously not planned from the AEW side of things, but there was just this kind of, again, the beginning of the end. You see some of the seeds with some of the issues that Punk had with Page and the Elite and all the stuff more we'll talk about in September. But then, obviously, the match happened. And then the All Out rematch was made. You had CM Punk, Jon Moxley retained the title in a very short match. That was crazy. And then you obviously the All Out rematch was made. That whole night was just so strange in so many different ways to me. And I'm sure it was for you as well. Just again, his return not being surprising, but how quickly they made the match, and then in the match itself being so short, it was. It just felt something else was going on. But I mean, yeah. What do you remember about that night?
I remember. So I'm the biggest CM Punk mark in the world. If you do already follow me, you know that. If you're just learning who I am, I apologize for how insufferable I am with it. Still level-headed to realize that maybe he didn't go about things in the best way in the following month that we're talking about. But I was so excited when he came back. I knew that he was probably coming back soon, but I don't think anybody had really fully known the date here. I think this was a nice surprise. They had been kind of vague about his foot injury and not letting us know, which I personally like. I like being kind of blindsided in that way. The squash with Mox was weird, but I also kind of liked it for a few reasons. One, if you're going to do the interim title thing, I think it's kind of cool because I feel like it legitimizes it if you have the interim champion win. That kind of says, hey, I'm not the placeholder champion. So for them to do that and to have him essentially squash Punk, I thought was such an interesting idea and something that nobody saw coming. And because the AEW fan base is a little bit more, I don't want to say smarky because that has such a connotation, but like they'll kind of like jump on what might be a more formulaic or predictable booking situation to do something that completely threw them off with Punk coming back. I thought was really fun. I think we knew he'd probably win the rematch there because you were setting up for a Punk title run, but I like that it made Moxley a multi-time champion. I liked that they did something nobody was expecting. Like anytime I see something in wrestling that shocks me, I'm a happy camper with that. So
yeah,
that was a really interesting, story to have unfolding. And then of course I didn't really think too much of the Hangman Page call out until we found out everything that happened later, but I thought, oh, maybe he's starting to turn heel here. I didn't expect it to be in real life, but yeah. I was like, oh, he's calling out the hometown champion and he doesn't show up, like he's got his teeth back a little bit. And then the promos with Moxley that would follow of He's always been the third best guy in his own stable. Talking about Eddie Kingston and the way that he did, like, I thought maybe we were just getting like a dicier slow burn heel turn from Punk. I had no idea, of course. I don't think anybody did at that point, the implications of what would come after that.
Yeah, exactly. And I was reading some of the other stories from this time in interviews that that Punk did with Sports Illustrated. And he talked about he was happy with the creative, and you know, he basically alluded that some of the stories didn't have a lot of truth to them. It's kind of interesting now seeing this months later that it looks like they did. And I talked about this a while ago when I was doing the May podcast about essentially when did the dissension start happening? Because around May, before Double or Nothing, he did an interview saying that, you know, AEW, this is what wrestling's supposed to be. And he was so in love with what was going on, right? And then it was kind of like, one of these days, I'm hoping to really kind of understand what was happening behind the scenes at that point. When he was saying that he was so in love with everything, were there other people saying, well, of course you are because you're miserable, you're doing this, and everyone else is upset? Or was it a case of something happened after that, after he won the title at Double or Nothing? Did something start to change? It's kind of like, I'm so interested in what the timeline is of when the dissension happened, really kind of where it started. And it could have been after that. I don't know. But it's a fascinating kind of timeline, this May to what would be September, and just how everything happened and why it happened.
And when did it become a big deal, right? I think we all kind of have a general acceptance, like in a sports, entertainment, wrestling, locker room, whatever you want to call it. Like, there's never going to be 100% of people getting along all the time. And there was certainly more of that to come in later months and weeks. But I think, when did it start to feel like it was kind of like this tipping point or this breaking point? When do things go from being like, I didn't really like how that was handled and it annoyed me, but and you move on from it to all of a sudden, like, it's things start to implode. I'm wondering if that was like a switch or if that was a slower buildup. And I don't know if we'll ever find out, to be honest.
Yeah. Hopefully someday we do. I think it'd be fascinating. It might be decades from now, but hopefully someday we'll get the story. Maybe a nice documentary series on a streaming service somewhere. So the rest, so All Out, we had the build to a lot of the matches there. Obviously, FTR and Wardlow taking on Jay Lethal in the debuting Motor City Machine Guns. That was a bit of a surprise. That we had initially Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm announced for the AEW Women's title. However, that would change because Thunder Rosa, in kind of a teary, very like quick hit promo on Dynamite, basically said that she could not compete at All Out and they were introducing an interim title instead. What followed after that was Rosa essentially, there was a lot of people saying that the back injury wasn't real. It was a work that she didn't want to drop the title. Of course, she's adamantly denied that. She's still out to this point, probably going to be out until it looks like February, perhaps, depending on what has been said out there. Again, it could be one of those things where she makes a surprise return in January at that LA show. Who knows? I know a lot of people think it's Sasha Banks, but who knows what's going to happen there. You had Jericho versus Danielson announced, and then obviously during the month, this kind of got overshadowed, was Kenny Omega made his return on AEW Dynamite, advancing in the Trios title tournament, with the Young Bucks. That was obviously a big deal as well, kind of doing an angle where he was, he had the full bodysuit on, but essentially a compression shirt. It was kind of like you don't really see this a lot when wrestlers come back from injuries, is that they wrestle like they're coming back from an injury, right? Usually when you see them, it's just like, oh, nothing happened. But it was kind of played into the story, which was a lot different. And obviously, as he would improve as weeks went on, you know, he would take the shirt off one week, he would do this, less bandages, what have you. So it's kind of fascinating. But yeah, the road to All Out was fascinating for a lot of reasons. And again, we talked about the Punk and Hangman promo and Tony Khan saying that Punk had unresolved anger towards Hangman Page. Again, that when he said that, it felt like it could be a little storyline thing they wanted to kind of build up, but we soon learned that was behind the scenes. But it was a wild ride to the building of All Out. And again, Kenny Omega kind of being just one of the items on this list. It was a very newsworthy month.
Definitely. And to your point about Thunder Rosa, you know, I think she was kind of just getting going. And I don't know if her title reign had found its footing completely, but it's a shame. And it certainly seems like that injury is real. I know she said a couple months ago or maybe even weeks ago at this point, that it was the first time she was even able to jog. So just like healing thoughts to that. And What's crazy to me is that was just August, and I feel like the AEW women's division is in such a stronger place for so many reasons. And it makes me happy. I've been highly critical of the AEW women's division, not the talent, but the direction. I feel like has kind of underutilized the potential of a lot of the workers there. I think Toni Storm, and it's funny that it begins here, her reign was such an important piece of transitioning us from where we were to where we are in that division. Like, she's such a consistent worker. She's a really solid promo. She's a great storyteller. That Storm Zero finisher is so cool. That middle rope DDT, like,
yep.
She just delivered consistency that I don't think we were getting as a full package worker in a lot of ways. I know, you know, I think Britt's reign was fantastic. She was injured for part of it, and I didn't feel like the stories were there. Like, it felt very Challenger of the Month Club, but something clicked with that Toni Storm reign for me as a fan, where I feel like I was getting great in ring work, great promos, and all of a sudden the story started to clear up and become a little bit more logical and make a little more sense. So looking back at August to where we're at now, it's incredible to see what I feel like is a ton of growth in the AEW women's division in such a short amount of time. And then Kenny Omega, yeah, I loved the story that they were telling. Obviously, that got cut a little short with what came in September. I'll save that juice for your next guest here. But, you know, what I loved about him having that story in particular was, he had so many, it wasn't like he went away for an injury. He was like, every part of that guy was injured. I always say he was like the knight, if you're a Monty Python fan, who gets his arms chopped off and his legs chopped off. And he's like, 'tis only a scratch. That guy was going through so many injuries that the idea he wasn't fully healed in a more gradual comeback, I thought was such a compelling story for one of the best workers in the world. He was obviously going to be coming back babyface, I think. And to immediately come back with vulnerabilities, I thought was such a cool story, because normally when someone comes back from injury, it's all fire, right? Like, mm-hmm. usually a huge pop, they're rested, they're ready to go. Maybe they got repackaged in the process. Him coming back, still not at 100%, I thought was a really interesting approach that we don't see a lot.
Yeah. And I think to your point about the women's division, I think one thing that has helped change is more physical matches. Toni Storm, Jamie Hayter, look what Athena's done. I mean, Athena, when she debuted earlier, it was this kind of thing where they debuted her and then it's kind of like cool down, dark elevation, occasional rain, you know, and it wasn't her in a sense. Like, now you see the past couple months, ever since that match in Toronto, everything has changed. And it's more Jamie Hayter. It's all very physical stuff. And that's what fans seem to really like, because it's different than what you can see other places. And for the most part, you know, fans are into it, and the women seem to be into it as well. They're like, we can hit just as hard as the men, so why not go for it? And I think part of that has helped that along, is more physical stuff that and things that you don't see other places, and you can tell it seems to be working. So I hope they kind of continue that direction, and they have a lot of hard hitters, you know, and I think that could be something that, obviously, to, you know, to be safe and all those things, but it's a fun thing to watch, you know, it's different, and I think that's a good thing.
Agreed entirely. And just nice to see some consistency there too, with rotating more talent, but having stories that are playing in the long game as well. It's been really wonderful. And to think that Toni Storm, just as recently as August, was the one taking over that title reign is crazy, because it feels like they've grown, in my opinion, leaps and bounds over that and essentially one business quarter. So good for them.
Exactly. So a lot of other, I put this other block in at the top here, a lot of other internal strife, again, as we kind of lead in what would happen at All Out. There was a WWE contract tampering, obviously, with the, the Levesque regime taking over. There was a lot of discussion about just not one talent, but a lot of talents that were released by AEW or released by WWE and had to sign with AEW and basically trying to get them out of their deals or if they're interested in coming back, what have you. So there was some talk about that. Obviously, Tony Khan discussed a lot of this and essentially sending a cease and desist letter. He said there was a talent meeting that they had, which was much discussed. Tony Schiavone said on a podcast, as far as backstage changes, they were going to make it at AEW a better place to work. Again, there was David reported some backstage drama that was nearing a quote-unquote breaking point with some wrestlers. Warner Bros. Discovery Kind of, as a side note, one of some of the language on programming toned down a bit. Obviously, they said the word shit a lot, and to the point, just desensitized. It was kind of just like overused. So I think they wanted kind of that a little bit toned down. And I put this, so we'll kind of focus on that. But yeah, there was a lot of like just internal issues that were starting to bubble up. And again, we now, with hindsight, we now know a lot of what was happening. Or we have a big sense of it, but there was just a lot of issues that seem to have calmed down now. But we're just kind of the tip of the iceberg back in August.
Yeah, it was interesting because it felt like, to me, the momentum that WWE picked up and the first cracks in the kind of armor of AEW started to coincide a little bit. And that made for a really interesting, but kind of felt like a momentum shift. I would say it's a little bit more even keeled now with some of the dust settling in AEW, with WWE coming back down to earth a little bit. I think a lot of their surprise returns are done. I think they're running into some booking issues. Like, I think both places are in a more realistic spot than they were, but having those two things happen at the same time was a really interesting time. I felt like to be watching, because it had felt like one side was kind of the golden child, and then booking got a little weird and you're starting to hear some backstage stuff. And then I think there was a very welcome and healthy change, it sounds like, on the WWE side with the regime takeover for whichever reasons. I think people were frustrated with the creative there, as well as obviously, some of the cultural things and what was going on with Vince McMahon and the whole, that entire scandal, which still isn't done, as you'll discuss, I'm sure, at the end of the year. Uh-huh. But having those two things happen at the same time was a very weird little experience as a fan, because it seemed like one was red hot and the other was cooled off. And then all of a sudden it was like a flip switch. And I think now they're both doing what they do well again.
Exactly. Let's go through some of the various bullets of the month. I'll go through this in two different chunks, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts on anything specifically here. Tony Khan said that the roster will be strong, the strongest and best it's ever been after All Out. Of course, keep that in the back of your mind. AEW Fight Forever, the video game, was finally made available for pre-order, and a trailer was released. I feel like that's been talked about forever, but hopefully will come out at some point in 2023. Tony Khan said on the recent changes in creative in WWE that it's going to, quote-unquote, it's going to change the competition, and that WWE has been doing better shows recently. Bryan Danielson said he was going to fucking deck Miz during that infamous WWE Talking Smack segment that all of us loved so much way back in the day. AEW added Madison Rayne as a coach. They also announced some other promotions in their talent relations department, QT Marshall, Tony Schiavone, a couple others. And Madison Rayne debuted just a few days later on Rampage. And I think she's been on screen a little bit more than I thought she would be, but she's kind of playing a role and so on. But not a like huge push, but she's involved. Cassie Lee and AEW Sean Spears obviously are expecting their first child, which has been born, I believe, at this point. I'm not sure. The Undisputed Elite imploded on Dynamite when Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish turned on the Young Bucks. Eddie Kingston, this is a story I forgot about. Eddie Kingston challenging Sammy Guevara to an match at All Out. And Kingston, then the thing just kind of cooled off because Kingston turned out to be suspended by AEW quietly because they had a dispute in the back. She got a little bit physical due to a promo that no one saw. Guevara took a few shots at Eddie's weight. Guevara released a statement about it and, wasn't super apologetic. And, of course, people just didn't really like Sammy anyway because of all the Ty Conte stuff. Kingston asked fans to let it go. So that became a whole thing in the month. Sammy and Ty Conte got married during the month, so quite an August for Mr. Guevara. Mance Warner made his AEW debut, first announced to be against Jon Moxley, and then obviously he had a match on Dark Elevation that was taped prior to that. So that was very interesting. Blake Christian was revealed he was under an ROH AEW agreement. Battle of the Belts 4 was announced for Washington, D.C. The boys signed contracts with Ring of Honor. At Battle of the Belts 3, Claudio Castagnoli retained the ROH world title over Konosuke Takeshita. Thunder Rosa at that point retaining the title over Jamie Hayter. Hayter suffered a broken nose in that one. And then TNT champion Warlow defended against Jay Lethal. Tony Khan said AEW was not going to move ahead to two-night pay-per-views like Wrestle Kingdom or WrestleMania. The Trios tournament began, title tournament. I thought it was a little bit underwhelming, the bracket, when it was first announced. It could just be me. based on all the trios that weren't involved in it. Like, I just kind of was hoping for a little bit more, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen the year ahead. And then Penelope Ford made her return after a long absence from injury. Thoughts about any of that?
Sure. So now in hindsight, right, it's so funny that we see that the roster is going to be stronger than ever after All Out. God bless Tony Khan. Like, he's always going to say that you could have, you know, you could have indie kids just out of high school, and he would be saying that if they were the ones that were signed to his roster. He is kind of, in a delightful way, one of the most, like, carny promotery promoters out there. Like, when he was doing all those Impact commercials, those were cracking me up. But, like, I the way he Twitter beefs with people, like, he's out there promoting his product. You're never going to hear him, especially at that point where things were probably imploding, but he was trying to keep it quiet, be like, yeah, no, our roster's in shambles. Like, of course, no one's ever going to say that, but it is so funny in hindsight there. But yeah, there were a couple of things in here that I had kind of forgotten about. That's really fun to see. The promotions in AEW, I think, were really important, since it sounded like there was a lack of communication flow. I think we saw that quite a bit. Like, there seemed like there was just a lot of the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. So it was nice to see those people getting promoted for sure. The video game, I'm not the girl to talk to about that, and it's been talked about a lot, so I'll leave that one out. Love Danielson talking about The Miz. That was such a fun thing. Madison Rayne, I think we just talked about it, right, with the women's division. I think there's a lot of other pieces that came in and helped, but undeniably, I think that's awesome. Like, if she is helping in the ring, and to your point, she's been on TV a little bit more, but to serve a role, I think that's awesome. The Undisputed Elite imploding was definitely one I wanted to just touch on, because Now, like, look at where we are, right? None of those guys are on my screen in AEW. Bobby Fish is in Impact, dropping crickets for promos, as we've heard. Kyle O'Reilly, I think, his absence is one that's a little bit bigger than people realize. Like, that was a tough one, because I feel like people were just kind of starting to see what he can do. He had three matches back to back to back that were so great, and then he gets a pretty severe injury out of that. And of course, Adam Cole with the concussion issue. So that was something I was so excited for. And now, because unfortunately due to injury and contract being up, no longer the case. And Eddie Kingston and Sammy Guevara I wanted to touch on too, because that one was interesting for kind of the nothing that it was, but because it was on the heels of all this other stuff, or swirling around the same time as all this other stuff, it became a bigger deal. But it just cracks me up in that I think people were a little burnt out on Sammy Guevara. I think he's getting the wrong kind of heat. That Dan Lambert angle didn't help anyone. His feud with Scorpio Sky went on way too long. I think people that make judgments about other people's personal lives are kind of nerds. Like, I won't dig into somebody's relationship status at all, but the perception of him both on screen and off screen wasn't great. And then Eddie Kingston is the most, I always say he's the most day one guy that wasn't there day one in the world. Like, yeah. He is such family to fans that even when he comes out on Twitter multiple times and says, "I was wrong, it's my fault, leave Sammy alone," people are just like, "Nah, this was on Sammy somehow." We've all collectively decided, but yeah. That blind love for Eddie Kingston is something I kind of share, honestly. So that's a fun one. I'll touch on the boys signing in Ring of Honor too, because I'm such a Dalton Castle fan, and it's so cool that they used the original boys there. I love that. And obviously, more coming down the mountain with ROH, but I love Dalton Castle. It wasn't until I was at Grand Slam and heard his reception that he got in person that I realized how over this guy is. And he holds such a special, unique place in wrestling, and I think has a character that people have attempted for decades inauthentically that he just does really, really well. So that's a fun one. That's kind of sleeper news that just made me very, very happy. Trios tournament was an interesting one, because I did feel like that bracket was a little underwhelming. And in retrospect, like, I thought for sure it should have gone to House of Black. Like, that's where my head and my heart were. But I saw that they were setting up for the singles discussion between Adam Page and Kenny Omega, right? Like, coming back to that story. So I figured we were going to end up where we were. But it was just interesting. Like, I was like, House of Black should be the inaugural champs, and they should have them for like 6 months. And then, of course, down the road, we see what happens with Malakai Black. And it seemed like a culmination of creative and personal issues that I certainly don't want to dig into. But I'm excited to see them back in present day. But that bracket, I was like, these guys are set up to be trios champions for sure.
Yeah.
But did not go that way. And then from this group, I'll also just say that Penelope Ford returning, another one that might be a little bit more of a sleeper, but I felt like when she came back, she was doing her best work. She would then go on to get injured again, unfortunately, with a much shorter term injury, and she's back again. But she came back kind of with some more momentum, and I thought with a lot more consistent in ring work. I was very happy to see that from her. So very eventful. Those aren't even like the full gamut of the bullets that you have outlined. And I didn't even touch on all of them, but that's how chock full this month and year have been. So
that's right. And I got a few more for you. Chris Statlander had surgery for a torn ACL and meniscus injury. She's going to be out for 6 to 8 months. Parker Boudreaux signed a contract with AEW and basically has not really been seen a lot since. So it's kind of a strange thing. AEW wrestlers were expected to take part in Wrestle Kingdom 17. We'll see how that happens over the next couple weeks. The Ricky Steamboat appearance was announced for a House of the Dragon edition of AEW Dynamite. AEW announced a special Tuesday night Dynamite in Cincinnati and a third live October Rampage, building up that. A lot of live Rampages, kind of an experiment there for them in the month of October. MJF was expected back in AEW somewhat soon, as they said there. Angelo Parker and Matt Menard signed contract extensions. Weston Blake and No Way Jose made their debuts during AEW Dark tapings in Orlando. Hikaru Shida was defending the Regina De Wave title in AEW. Samoa Joe expected back soon as filming wrapped on Twisted Metal, the series for Peacock that should be coming out in 2023. FTR said their removal from the Fight Forever game was a quote-unquote non-issue. I don't know if we ever realized what that non-issue was, but or the issue. Very strange. Anyway, Wardlow said he was, quote-unquote, still trying to get back on track after his, quote-unquote, ruined AEW Double or Nothing. He was open about that experience. And then Darby Allin revealed in an interview that he paid $12,000 to get out of his contract with Evolve and join AEW. Thoughts on any of that?
Sure. I think Chris Statlander going down is such a bummer. And I think that in 2023, when she comes back, she's the one to dethrone Jade Cargill. I think that's where we're heading, and I think she is going to have a heck of a run with that title. I think we can maybe shift back to an open challenge style, and she's just such a great and consistent in-ring worker. She was really a standout that we saw kind of jump into the spotlight and really organically with the crowd. Like, she had that that match against Ruby Soho for the Owen, and yes. Like, Ruby Soho was babyface as could be, and then all of a sudden there was kind of like an uprising for Chris Statlander, and I think she just has a special connection with the crowd. We've seen her grow leaps and bounds. So I'm so bummed that she had to have surgery, but I'm so excited for what's to come for her down the road. Also in this batch, the MJF expected back in AEW somewhat soon. It's so funny how he kind of got a bit of a taste with his own medicine, right? He comes back and then CM Punk kind of trances all over his moment, which they've obviously alluded to in promo since, but Wardlow, we'll tie it back to that bullet point too. You know, that was kind of in the beginning of what was an insane wave. I'm sure Dave didn't sleep, and I know Sean didn't sleep from like April till Brawl Out, as we're calling it now. Like, yeah. Sasha leaving and Naomi leaving and MJF were kind of at the beginning of this whole cluster that came about. So seeing those things kind of coincide is funny. Like, I loved MJF's return with the pipe bomb style thing, but to hear Wardlow say that he was still trying to get back on track, it kind of felt like they never fully got there for his reign, which is a bummer. Like, the consistent and a consistent but not always the biggest complaint that I have with AEW is sometimes they put so much investment into leading up to the titles, and then when they get to the reigns, they get wonky. Yeah, like, definitely with Hangman, you know, he had those Danielson matches out of the gate, but then that got a little off. Like, and Wardlow was the same way. I think the most compelling, maybe the only like full story he really has been the Samoa Joe stuff. So whether he wins it back off of that or he just gets to kind of get back on a story track. I think he's a great talent. He's someone that we've seen grow in ring as well. Very, very organically over with the crowd. Very special talent. One that WWE will for sure be coming for when his contract is up. But I don't know if they ever fully recovered that for him, which is kind of a bummer. But I think now that MJF is champ, we might see Wardlow become a very viable challenger. And we might get to see this bullet point that we're talking about in August kind of resurface in a really fun way. And then I'll also just call out the JAS, Angelo Parker and Matt Menard signing with AEW. If that doesn't make Daddy Magic's nipple hard, I don't know what does, but they are so great. They were a surprise release for me from the NXT side because it felt like they had kind of just gotten them on a track in NXT and then released them. Like they were just kind of getting heated up over there. But they've played their role so perfectly in the Jericho Appreciation Society. I feel like that stable has kind of had its ups and downs, but their work in it, I think, has been really, really fun and fantastic. And very just glad to see them getting consistently worked. They were a really solid pickup, I think, for AEW for sure.
Yeah. Let's flip to the other side of the street, WWE. And really, you know, there's no events this month, obviously, because they had two in July. And this was kind of the first vestiges, so to speak, of the Triple H era, because he brought all his old friends back. And you have the meme of the Thanos glove with all the different faces on it. I can kind of see this as I go through this list. So Johnny Gargano brought back Karrion Kross, Scarlett, Dexter Lumis, Hit Row with no Swerve, of course. Top Dollar saying that Hit Row is one of Triple H's top priorities to bring back. That was according to him. I don't know if that was true, but regardless, Hit Row is back. There were some rumored call-ups to the main roster with all of Legado del Fantasma being called up. And Solo Sikoa was rumored to be going up. Indy Hartwell was rumored to be going up. Santana Garrett returned to the company as a PC coach, and that at that point there was a report out there they had discussed bringing back Braun Strowman, which obviously later happened as well. So this month really is a lot about, anyone that takes over a new job, you kind of get in there and you kind of, you don't make quick changes right away, especially in your leadership role. You just kind of like see what's going on. And I think he didn't make massive changes, but he made changes in trying to correct some of the wrongs with all the people that were released in 2020, 2021 by bringing some of these people back. Obviously, you know, Gargano, I think, was a surprise to some. But I think when the opinions changed for people going back when Vince left, and Gargano was certainly at the top of that list, but really just kind of, again, bringing back people that he believed in at one point. There were some other people, obviously, that would come back down the road, but this is kind of the, this is kind of him starting to put his fingerprints on stuff, saying, this is my creative now. This is my company now, even though obviously Steph and Nick Khan are running it. But from a creative standpoint, a talent standpoint, this is my ball game now. And this was a big month to start putting that in action.
Definitely. So what's exciting is all these people came back and we got these like great returns. The Gargano moment is one I think that we'll remember for a really long time. My only thing now seeing these names though is there were two things I was really excited about with these comebacks. One, very excited that this group of people got called back, but two, I was like, this is awesome. Roman Reigns feels so stale, which he doesn't anymore for different reasons, but like there'll be this whole new slate of competitors and nobody in here is really near any title picture, which is kind of the bummer. I think Karrion Kross's return is just now finding its footing. Like him and Scarlett seemed like they weren't operating in sync with each other to me. He felt more like a bigger dude, like cool assassin guy, and she was like Tara Witchy woman, and it didn't always seem like they were a part of the same act. But I think their recent efforts have been really good with that. Gargano's doing really fun stuff, but nowhere near a title. Hit Row was kind of on a track, but then they started kind of losing a bunch. You know, Braun Strowman was rumored to be coming back. He's obviously back now, and I think probably positioned to take that IC title or at least come close to it. So I look at the returns, and I'm so glad that a lot of them are back, but at the same time, how they've been used is maybe not my favorite. Also with that, though, keeping in mind that, like, the season right now for WWE wrestling isn't always like the best across the board. Like they're not going to start anything long term before Royal Rumble, right?
Right.
So I just want to see the chess pieces that are back, who I'm very excited for, maybe positioned on the board a little bit better. But Definitely. It was like AEW had pop after pop after pop, and then all of a sudden WWE has pop after pop after pop. But when I look at where they're at now, I hope that they get positioned a little bit stronger.
I would agree. Let's go through some of the various news items that happened through the month. We'll go with this first section here. Becky Lynch suffered a separated shoulder at SummerSlam. That was revealed, and she would be missing several months, obviously taken out on an appearance on Raw, and she would obviously make her return along with obviously the fixing with the damage control and all that as well. There was a report that Sasha and Naomi had reached a deal to return to WWE, except they didn't, and we still don't know what the deal is there. We kind of have a little bit better indication this week, but again, there was a lot of questions around these two. Sasha and Naomi attended the premiere for Disney's She-Hulk. And Sasha Banks is also the victim of a car break-in. Another random headline from the month. The company continues to change up their corporate infrastructure, hiring a new SVP of global sales and partnerships. Again, a lot of the things, some of the things that Stephanie used to do, and again, continue to make the company more in their image. This is a quote that caught fire on the socials. Triple H saying, I believe this is on the Pat McAfee show, or it might have been another one, that Vince McMahon took wrestling from a little thing in bars to a global sensation, saying that, you know, it's the smoky rooms and all that stuff. Yeah, it was a quote that people kind of scratched their heads at quite a bit. Dakota Kai said that her SummerSlam return happened at the last minute. Lex Luger said he would attempt to walk on stage if he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. We learned that wrestling and wrestler were no longer considered dirty words in WWE. Clash at the Castle started to take shape for September. Liv Morgan defending the title against Shayna Baszler. The Riddle-Rollins match was supposed to happen at SummerSlam, was then moved obviously to Clash. And then Gunther versus Sheamus, a banger after banger, as we would soon find out in just a month or so. And then Tyson Fury obviously was expected to make an appearance on that show as well. Carmella and Tatum Paxley suffered injuries at house shows throughout the course of a weekend. John Laurinaitis, again, going back to all the Vince McMahon stuff, he was officially fired from the company as part of his role there. And then Kevin Dunn, however, was expected to remain, not that he was involved in the Vince stuff, but there was always this assumption that when Triple H took over, if he was going to take over, that he would bring his own creative person, own producer, what have you. But no, Kevin Dunn expected to remain, and he has done just that. Undertaker announced two One Dead Man shows, two for Cardiff and then one for Philadelphia. The company announced 17 new Performance Center recruits headed up by former Bellator MMA competitor Valerie Lareda, who just made her debut recently. Bret Hart said he felt kind of sad about Vince McMahon's retirement, and Becky Lynch said it was a new era. Rey Mysterio said WWE is in the hands of the right people. So you had all these talents who were doing interviews. Obviously, they were asked about things, and they're saying all the right things. And tied into Bret Hart, Goldberg said he's done apologizing to Bret Hart, because every time Bret Hart talks about Bill Goldberg, he references back concussion, unsafe worker, and all that stuff. The feud that will never continue. Thoughts about any of that?
I mean, the last bullet point there is the only one that matters. Bret Hart, you said every time he talks about Goldberg, it's just every time he talks, he buries Goldberg. I think it's hysterical, personally. It absolutely cracks me up. But yeah, this was a really impressive and busy month for WWE, right? Becky separating her shoulder was such a bummer. I think that's kind of why Alexa Bliss initially got lost a little bit. I feel like her track was the one Becky Lynch was supposed to be on versus Damage Control, which obviously became a huge, huge like catalyst for bringing back those women's tag team titles, which is kind of what your next bullet point is leading to. Of Sasha Banks and Naomi are returning. Not so much. That has been a perpetual story that has not developed and developed at the same time, right? So that's interesting, but they were dropping hints, like referencing their finishers on Twitter and stuff. I know they had said with something in the rear view, and Sasha, like, they said something about making a statement with the women's tag titles. They haven't come back, and we will see. But yeah, the car break-in stinks as well. The new hirings and firings, of course. Kevin Dunn sticking around was a little surprising, but I know a lot of what was said was who takes over that role. It's not the easiest thing in the world to figure out. But Dakota Kai talking about her SummerSlam return, I would imagine AEW was courting her pretty heavily, but she's one that I was so excited to see on the main roster. I think she's an absolute TV star. She's just fantastic. And getting to see her and finding out that Io came back was such an awesome, awesome thing. I'm don't necessarily love how they've been used all the time. They've been losing a lot for people that are supposed to feel like a really big deal, but very happy they're on my television more weeks than not. And Clash at the Castle, man, I thought Gunther versus Sheamus was absolutely unbelievable. I was so glad that that moment happened for Sheamus, not to mention that the match happened for us. Felt like it was a missed opportunity to split up the titles, though. I think it would be in a healthier spot right now if maybe Drew had won there, if not both titles, at least one of them. Also felt like we should have had the Money in the Bank cash in there for sure with Austin Theory and just have him cash in and lose.
Yeah.
What else we got on here? Yeah. Laurinaitis getting fired was to be expected after the news that we had. But Bret Hart, really, out of all the things that happened in this month, takes the cake for me. Absolutely adore him saying that. But so much change. So much change in the month of August, for sure, as the pieces are starting to settle in a little bit.
Yeah, well, let's continue with the month. We'll see if we can give you another cake to take to upend Bret Hart.
Drew McIntyre
was pulled off several weekend WWE weekend live events due to a back injury. Trish Stratus was announced for two appearances at house shows. The company announced record-breaking first-day ticket sales for WrestleMania 39 in Los Angeles. 90,000 tickets, of course, a lot of that because it's spread over two nights and people had to buy packages. But regardless, already a big hit without a single match announced. The company had to delay their Q2 investors call because of all the Vince McMahon bullshit and more investigation. They uncovered more hush funds or issues and problems like that, costs and expenses. Wall Street Journal reported that they donated $5 million in unrecorded company expenses to the Trump Foundation that's going to have to be paid back. So all in all, it looked to be about just under $20 million. Pocket change for you and I, obviously. But
Of course.
And VKM. But yeah, just again, the fallout from that, of course, the company reporting $328 million of revenue for the quarter. So not too shabby there. Speaking of the former chairman, he was spotted with John Cena on his 77th birthday. Not John Cena's 77th birthday, of course, Vince McMahon's. At a posh nightclub with John Cena, his wife, and a woman that was definitely not Linda McMahon. We'll put it that way. So he's spotted out there. It was learned that WWE was still working with Netflix on the Vince McMahon project that originally we thought was pushed back or taken off the schedule due to all the scandal coming out. We still don't know what form that's going to take. If the company's working with Netflix, how's it going to take? Obviously, the bullshit meter will be high for that. So I guess we'll kind of see what happens there. In news that made everyone happy, Brandi Rhodes made her in-ring return at the WWE Performance Center working out there. The company filed trademark for Damage Control, of course, the Bayley, Io Sky, and Dakota Kai faction. The Road Dog, Jesse James, returned to WWE as a senior VP of live events, replacing Jeff Jarrett. So Jeff Jarrett had just been hired months prior, and then the Road Dog of all people to replace him. What a weird business this is. Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah won the WWE Women's Tag Team titles on Raw. And again, the lead-up to this was kind of strange because Toxic Attraction replaced Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons in the tag team tournament due to a Zoe Stark injury and Lyons being medically unavailable, as they called it. But then Toxic Attraction had to pull out of it because Dolan got injured. So just injuries and all this stuff. And again, you talked early about the belief that, you know, it's going to be Sasha and Naomi making some sort of surprise appearance at some point. That did not happen. Kurt Angle coming back to the company, at least in some form, was announced for an edition of Raw. Edge teased his retirement for the upcoming year in a post-Raw promo to the live crowd. Bianca Belair signed with a new talent agency, WME. The company is going to remain TV PG for the foreseeable future. Again, last month we had talked about there were some rumors they may go back to PG-13, but that wasn't going to happen. Rey Mysterio and The Miz appeared on ABC's Celebrity Family Feud. Nikki Bella got married, and a four-part special on her marriage and life and all that good stuff was airing on E! Matt Riddle and Austin Theory got their first names back, and WWE and Amazon filed a joint lawsuit against counterfeit title belt merchants. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, a little less sticks out to me in here, but some good ones. A couple injuries, which you never love to see, but definitely the second part of that scandal being a $5 million unrecorded company expense to the Trump Foundation with Linda McMahon having worked in the Trump Foundation is definitely was the next news drop for sure. I can't remember if he had fully stepped away at this point. Do you remember? He must have. I guess he was fully.
At which point?
Vince had fully stepped down by the second hit of this. Like, he was out for like a solid month, right?
Yes.
Because if Triple H had taken all those positions. I can't. These timelines, man. Crazy. But yeah, that was definitely a newsworthy second drop that we got there for sure. Brandi Rhodes making an in-ring return at the Performance Center. I think she's since stepped out, but it's been kind of back and forth with her. There was discussion about her coming back in so many roles because she's played so many roles, right? She was an in-ring talent. She was a ring announcer. She was an awesome valet. She also was doing like a cooking show and stuff. So that one was definitely had people talking. That is for sure. I think Bianca Belair signing with WME is awesome. The more that we get to see stuff like that. And just credit to her and them for building a star. We haven't seen them build true stars, I feel like, in the past, 6 years maybe. And she's definitely one that stands out. I don't know if we've seen it on the men's side, but one of the few NXT handoffs that's really, really worked extremely well. And good for Nikki Bella getting married. We'll end on that one. Good for her. A four-part special feels like a lot. Oh, and I will say, Riddle and Theory getting their first names back. We also saw earlier in the month that saying wrestler isn't a naughty word anymore. In general, WWE getting to sound more like human beings, I think, has been very healthy. Commentary having a little bit of a looser approach has been so good for Michael Cole. Being able to say wrestler, not superstar, just feels so much more natural. So to see the reins get kind of loosened there a little bit, I think, was something that was a really, really welcome change by Triple H.
I would completely agree. Yeah, imagine that, letting people talk like human beings.
Maybe wild.
Maybe they can actually let them watch TV like normal people, not the weird side angle too. We can only hope. Let's go into NXT real quick. We have Katana Chance and Caden Carter winning the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. Solo Sikoa was out of action with a sprained PCL. Mari Miller had to apologize to some Sasha Banks-related tweets, saying that Banks was quote-unquote German and black, but not African-American. NXT UK tapings were canceled due to soccer coverage at BT Sports Studios. Zoe Stark was learned she worked as a producer while she was injured. We had Heatwave. We had Gallus making their debut, attacking the Diamond Mine. Santos Escobar was out, obviously, of the company, or out of NXT, rather, getting called up to the main roster after his loss to Tony D'Angelo in storyline. Blair Davenport appeared, and so did Tyler Bate, and he confronted Bron Breakker. And the reason for that is that NXT UK was no more. WWE launching, or soon to be no more. WWE announced the launching of NXT Europe for 2023, a September Worlds Collide event, which would obviously be the unification titles, which we'll talk about in a second. And obviously that resulted in a lot of releases on the NXT side. Mark Andrews, Flash Morgan Webster, Trent Seven, among all these NXT UK wrestlers that were released. So we really, at that point, we didn't really know who was going where. Since then, we've seen, obviously, a lot of talents come over to the mainland, so to speak. And one of those, obviously, being Tyler Bate. We mentioned Bron Breakker versus Tyler Bate unification match. And also Mandy Rose, Maiko Satomura, and Blair Davenport unification match was set for Worlds Collide. And Dexter Lumis appeared at NXT, reunited with Indy Hartwell. So they kind of connected the dots there in that long-running storyline. Charlie Dempsey made his NXT debut. That would be important for a lot of reasons. And we get to the William Regal stuff later on throughout the year. Wade Barrett signed a contract extension to be a commentator still with WWE. And then Halloween Havoc was reportedly scheduled for a special Saturday event. Thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, so as someone that covers NXT from week to week, this was kind of not like an earth-shattering development, but a big one, and ultimately resulted in what I think has been Bron Breakker's best match with Tyler Bate. What an outstanding talent. Having Miko Satomura was so cool. Blair Davenport also. It's just interesting to see what's going to happen. It sounds like they're going to be relaunching a Europe brand, as well as maybe in Japan. So that should be great. I do feel like these people definitely deserve to be on television. So regardless of what side of the pond that falls on, there's a lot of really great talent that was working in the UK. And I hope that, that they get their due, because there's been a lot of really, really good stuff there. Trent Seven, we obviously saw pop up in later months here on the AEW side. Maybe the ROH side, it seems like they're teasing that. So more back and forth a little bit between the companies for sure. NXT appearing, Dexter Lumis appearing on NXT to reunite with Indy Hartwell. I've been saying since then, just call her up, man. I think she's really, really ready. And then, yeah, I think this kind of had been all leading to this new NXT rebrand, but the product doesn't feel that much different. So I'm intrigued to see where things go. But I feel like NXT 2.0 was such a weird chapter, and it wasn't a great one. And we've seen some outstanding talents come through. We saw LA Knight come through, Bron Breakker's developing, Carmelo Hayes. But as far as someone that watches the week-to-week products, it doesn't feel necessarily like a TV product all the time. So, but this infusion from the UK talent, I feel like really, really helped. That Tyler Bate Bron Breakker match is an NXT match of the year contender for sure. So good stuff that happened there. And then the call-ups, I loved Santos Escobar lost to Tony D'Angelo. We get to see him on the main roster. That match with Ricochet was incredible. So you just hope to see smooth transitions for the people that do get called up.
Exactly. Let's go to Impact real quick. The Road Dogs, I mentioned earlier, obviously this is before he got rehired, was sitting with the crew backstage at Impact Emergence. Again, people remember the July episode. He said he was begging Tony Khan for a job with AEW. So he was going to try to get hired somewhere. And he ended up waiting was the best thing, getting hired back with his old buds at WWE. Bound for Glory is official for Albany, New York, not Danbury, Connecticut, as originally was reported. Impact Emergence took place. Josh Alexander defeating Alex Shelley to retain Impact World title. Jordynne Grace retaining the Knockouts title over Mia Yim. Afterwards, Masha Slamovich came out, beginning to set up a program between those two that would run for several months. Bandido and Ray Horace made their debuts on the show, and VXT won the Knockouts tag team titles. Company announced TV taping dates in Las Vegas and Florida. Scott Armstrong said he was appeared on screen working as a referee, but also was working backstage as well, longtime WWE official and worker as well. Josh Alexander versus Eddie Edwards world title match was announced for Impact Bound for Glory. Tennille Dashwood confirmed she was done for the company, and she was to be a free agent. Obviously, she would have a good place to go in just a couple months and back to WWE. Victory Road was taking shape. A three-way barbed wire main event match was announced for that show. Shane Taylor made his debut on the BTI pre-show, and after seeing him on the ROH Final Battle show this past weekend, I don't understand why they didn't make more of a big push for him. Maybe they did, and he turned down a deal. I don't know. But it's kind of a strange thing there. Joe Doering announced he was battling brain cancer for a second time. And then Impact reportedly had rejected Lady Frost's release request. That would come later in the year. But that was kind of just a weird Impact story throughout the year. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I would say that I feel like the rise of Masha Slamovich has been one of the most fun to watch. She's so great.
Another hard hitter, right?
Another really hard hitter. Yeah, she's a butt kicker. I really, really enjoy her work. And seeing her on the Knockouts Knockdown. Is that what it is? Knockdown?
Yes.
Knockouts Knockdown, yes. Right? I always switch them up. It's like all in and all out. I always cross them up, but she had her first appearance there, and I think she showed a lot of people who she is. I think that was last year into this year. Just fantastic stuff from her. I really, really like getting to see her on my screen. Josh Alexander, another rare situation where just how good they are at wrestling is kind of the thing that got him over. I love that. I think you could make that case with Danielson. I think you could make that case with FTR, that it's just really cool when the thing that gets you over is just how damn good you are at this. And I think Josh Alexander has certainly fallen into that category. Shane Taylor and Bandido, I wanted to touch on because they both seem like they are headed the way of AEW and ROH, as we've seen their appearances. One thing that I think is tricky with Impact is just because of the way their contract works and because they're not viewed as like the destination. Yeah. You know, it's tricky when you see these debuts to get invested because they might just show up somewhere else, right? And Lady Frost, I'm very glad she got her release. I found it kind of annoying that she was denied it when we saw people asking for releases under different circumstances. And, you know, it was costing her money to not be making money. She was still required to attend tapings that she wasn't being booked on, right? So very glad that she got what she was looking for. She's a fantastic talent. Seems like there's buzz for her other places, which is fantastic. Huge proponent of Miss Lady Frost, and a huge proponent of wrestlers kind of getting to work under their own terms in a sense. So
agreed.
Very happy about that. And of course, with Joe Doering, you hold the best for that situation with him and his family.
Exactly. Let's go to Japan. I don't know if you're much of a Japanese pro wrestling watcher. I am not, but I have to include these anyway, you know, contractually being part of the Observer Empire. I know a lot of people do. We'll go through these. So Carl Fredericks announced his departure from the company. Okada defeated Will Ospreay in the G1 finals. Jay White was removed from several events due to what was called heat stroke-like symptoms. Obviously, this still being in August. Kensuke Takeshita departed the United States after a four-month excursion. Obviously, a lot of that in AEW, but also working a ton of indies as well. Say he was not interested in going to WWE, but he did want to return to AEW, and that would become obviously a reality in a couple months. Aussie Open became the first ever New Japan Strong Tag Team Champion, so the win over Christopher Daniels and Yuya Uemura in the tournament finals they had there. New Japan was returning to United Kingdom for Royal Quest 2. FTR was one of the first talents announced for that show. Will Ospreay said he nearly died from a May kidney infection, so I'm at a canceled bunch of dates. It was pretty serious there. Tomohiro Ishii versus Tom Lawler and the Good Brothers were announced for the New Japan Strong's Autumn Action. Also, Shingo Takagi's debut for Strong was announced there as well. Anytime I see Autumn Action, I immediately think of Autumn Auction. I don't know why, even going through this list, I kept doing it. I almost wrote it down several times. Wrestle Kingdom 17 was announced to be a one-night event. Company was announced to be returning to New York City for an October pay-per-view, which would happen during Halloween weekend. And Stardom Wrestlers were obviously set for that show, as they said in July that that all their U.S.-based shows are going to feature Stardom Wrestlers at that point. Speaking of Stardom, Kyrie was off the Stardom pay-per-view, a Stardom August pay-per-view due to COVID-19. The company's Burning Spirit, Declaration of Power, and then their crossover event with Stardom were starting to take shape as well. New Japan revealed the tournament dates for their IWGP Women's Championship Tournament, and the title design was also revealed, and Alex Coughlin was off Burning Spirit due to injury. So yeah, this was a nice, a good month for them. Again, kind of leading in the IWGP Tournament, the Women's Championship Tournament. Really a big emphasis on Stardom, going back to July, some of the stuff they announced there. So yeah, I mean, kind of like the increase in interest in women's wrestling. We've talked about that a lot during this month. You see every kind of promotion, their own different ways of kind of increasing stuff in Japan, and especially New Japan being at the forefront of that as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of great stuff here. Okada winning the G1 again. I don't know. That seemed to be very divisive. People had split opinions on it. Kind of hard to argue when Okada is one of the best in the world, but that match was absolutely incredible between Okada and Ospreay. Really, really good stuff. A lot of match of the year contenders all year. I felt like, I would say the rise of Takeshita in general has been one of the most fun things to watch on my screen. I think him at Battle of the Belts with Claudio was one of the more breakout performances that he had, but he just had such a successful run in the US that before he signed here, I thought it was really, really cool to see someone just get so organically over. He's so charismatic. He has one of the best German suplexes I've ever seen. Really, really good stuff that we saw from him, and I think will do really wonderful things in AEW. But that tour that he had was fantastic, and I know he had some interest from WWE. How couldn't he? Aussie Open was as the first Strong Champs, I think is really cool. Obviously their match with FTR, a tag match of the year contender. You could say that about probably all three Briscoes matches, though, too. It's wild the run that they're on, but really cool to see. Really cool stuff to see. And to your point, we now have like a whole women's title, right, in New Japan, which is so great. The emphasis on Stardom is fantastic. Then other than that, yeah, just some bummer injuries, but some really severe stuff, too. Like, I feel like, you know, that Ospreay thing kind of flies under the radar because he's been putting on some really, really great matches. You're like, oh, right, that guy had a very serious kidney infection
right.
around here. So just really, really wonderful stuff that happened for New Japan. They had such a tough time during COVID. I felt like between travel issues and, you know, the evil title reign they were kind of coming out of, which wasn't the most successful thing over there. So it was just tricky between the crowd restrictions and just the talent having to not be able to make it because of COVID or waiting 2 weeks to be able to fight, I think was definitely tricky. So
great.
But seems like they're back on track now, which is great to see.
So let's go to the junk drawer. This is everything else that happened. And again, we'll split this into to two chunks to kind of round things up. GCW news. Jon Moxley defending the GCW title against Effie successfully at the part one of GCW Homecoming. And then Nick Gage came out. And Nick Gage accepted Moxley's title versus career match challenge. And that was set for GCW Fight Club coming up. I believe that was in September or October. Gage attacked Matt Cardona at part two of GCW Homecoming, so he was all over that show. Briscoe's regained the GCW tag team titles, and Rina Yamashita became the new GCW Ultraviolet champion. Of course, Ultraviolet thing, the light tubes, I think I'm thinking of along those lines. Maven was announced as officiating the Cardona's vow renewal at GCW Homecoming as part of that whole thing. Glenn Jacobs was reelected as the mayor of Knox County. Ric Flair's last match, the pay-per-view, did over 24,000 pay-per-view buys, which is seen as a really big success, obviously, for an indie show, nearly a $500,000 gate, and again, one of the most successful indie shows in a long, long time. Ric Flair is very happy with it, said he almost passed out. He said he did pass out twice during the last match. Again, very scary, looked to be near death at a couple points, so yeah, very not the best viewing experience in that respect. Conrad Thompson saying that the whole pay-per-view is part of a quote-unquote master plan. So we'll see where that goes. Part of that could include them filing the trademark for Southwest Championship Wrestling. So it seems like he's going to be doing more with that. And, of course, he's doing some stuff with AAA as well. So it looks like 2023 will be an interesting year to see what Conrad Thompson has going on. Thunder Rosa was announced to be challenging for the women's title at AAA's Triple Mania event in Mexico City. However, that would not happen due to the aforementioned injury. Vice TV announced Tales from the Territories would be coming to the network later in the year. Hammerstone versus Bandido for the MLW World title was announced for a September Super Series show between themselves and AAA. MLW changed an August TV taping to a house show due to some circumstances. Fightland was announced for Philadelphia. I put this in here because Brian Alvarez and Billy Starks taking on Tom Lawler and Killy Kelly was set for a GCW Black Label Pro 4-Cup Stuffed event. I put that in there because Brian got his ass kicked, which was great to see as always. Ronda Rousey influence. Judah Jean LaBelle passed away at 89 years old. Obviously, he has his own dalliances with pro wrestling as well, but obviously known, really got known by our generation, or later generations rather, for, again, her affiliation with Ronda Rousey during her MMA run. And then, it was just a big, huge influence on her. Freddie Prinze Jr. talked about his promotion, said that Karrion Kross was going to be his promotion's first champion. Obviously, that would be not to be. And again, Starcast filing trademark for the SCW, Southwest Championship Wrestling name. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, GCW is an interesting one because it feels like they've kind of cooled off since the month that we're talking about. I feel like after Hammerstein, things kind of put them in a weird spot. I know they committed to a lot of dates, but that Jon Moxley run was so incredible for them to have that with the Cardona runs. Huge, huge stuff for an independent promotion to be doing. I'm a huge proponent of Effie. I think Effie is so great. That match to me was a lot of fun. And then obviously everything that happened with Homecoming too was a blast. Like, I think Cardona really, really found a nice reinvention of himself for sure. Ric Flair's last pay-per-view was one of the most uncomfortable watching experience I've ever had as a wrestling fan. I think good for them for their buys and their money, I guess. But it felt like I did a post-show for it, and there were several chats that said it felt like you were watching elder abuse. It was really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that they might make it into a series if they wanted to do something like that. They have to have some better control over who they're choosing to do these, because that just felt wrong to be watching it. I was very, very uncomfortable. And then Hammerstone versus Bandido, underrated match. Alex Hammerstone's definitely one of my favorite talents right now, but I thought that was a whole bunch of fun. But who doesn't love to talk about Brian Alvarez getting his ass kicked here at the Observer, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Sincerely, very fun, though. Like, I love integrations like that. I know Sean did the GCW Battle Royal, which was really, really fun. Like, have fun, people. It's wrestling. It's not a big deal. Like, it's such a blast. But, a lot happening here. Freddie Prinze Jr. losing Karrion Kross as his first promotion champion. I know was kind of a blow to him. I'm very intrigued to see what happens there. Very intrigued to see what goes on, if it still goes on, where that stands, because while he wasn't my favorite on-screen champion, Freddie Prinze Jr., it does seem like he has a mind for what he's talking about. And it's just interesting whenever somebody wants to present an alternative type of promotion to wrestling, what that's going to look like. I'm intrigued. The more wrestling, the better.
Let's go to the last section here. Chris Dickinson filing a defamation lawsuit against some of his accusers for sexual assault and sexual abuse. And so Christina Von Erie released a statement in response. Dickinson appeared at a New Japan Strong Fighting Spirit Unleashed taping, not received well by the fans, to say the least. So that story obviously would keep going. Visa issues were revealed as keeping the reason that Tegan Knox was not wrestling since her WWE release. Obviously, she would get re-signed the company a couple months after. Bret Hart accompanying FTR, a big-time wrestling indie show. Obviously, a dream for FTR to have that happen. The arrest video was released by TMZ of Jake Atlas during his domestic violence issues there. Former NWA president Howard Brody passed away. NW74 happened over two nights. We had Scion winning the national title, La Rebellion regaining the tag team titles. The company announced Hard Times 3, set for November in New Orleans. The Fixers won the U.S. tag team titles. They announced the 75th anniversary show was returning to St. Louis. The main event, Trevor Murdoch retained the NWA world title over Tyrus. There was, again, this strange Nick Aldis situation where, you know, he was supposed to get the title shot and didn't. They kept him on the show anyway. He did a promo the first night, then he took on, who's the flat earth guy that used to
Flip
be?
Flip Gordon?
Yes, Flip Gordon, yes. Took on Flip Gordon for night two.
I needed one context clue. That's very funny.
That's right. That's the first one that I think of. Boy, what a career. What a career.
Not AJ Styles.
Exactly. Right. And then Nick Aldis taking on, defeating Flip Gordon night two. Just, again, this continued a strange situation that would culminate just a couple months later, and then Matt Cardona making his in-ring return after obviously tearing his biceps and being out for a few months, relinquishing the NWA world title and so on. So yeah, NWA 74 happened. In a quote that made its way around, again, talking about women's wrestling talent, Billy Corgan said, NWA Empower will return, but there wasn't enough talent to do it this year. He had to clarify some statements after that, so that was fun to follow. Matt Cardona essentially four Hard Times three. It was announced that Matt Cardona would be getting his rematch against Trevor Murdoch for the NWA world title at that event. Matt Raywald announced he was stepping away from the ring. He was going to focus on commentary instead. You can hear him on Impact and so on, a couple other places as well. And then former NXT wrestler Velveteen Dream has revealed he had been arrested twice since August 20th. So his post-WWE career still not going that well. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple that stand out to me. Bret with FTR, I think, is just one of the coolest, like, most heartwarming things that these grown men still get to be in a wrestling context with their heroes is awesome. The biggest one overall that stands out to me, unfortunately, is Billy Corgan saying that there's not enough talent for Empower this year. Just felt like the biggest load of crap. I feel like so many of the women that he used on the last one still aren't signed and are available or would probably be allowed to work. And I feel like the women's wrestling scene, as we talked about with earlier, like is maybe stronger than ever. So that was just unfortunate that he had said that and then would later go on to clarify that they can't work the NWA style, which feels like an even bigger load of crap when Tyrus is your current champion who offers no redeeming qualities, in my opinion. But unfortunate. And I think that probably led to some of the distrust with the Aldis family, with Mickey James and Nick Aldis, where we'll see where he ends up. But and then closing out too with Velveteen Dream getting arrested twice. Just an unfortunate situation. You know, I think maybe EC3 being the one to clarify the other side of that story might also not be the world's most reliable source based on other things that we've seen. However, you know, it sounds like there were a lot of issues with him in WWE. So unfortunate that continues to happen, but it sounds like they made the right call in releasing him. And he just hope that people behave better and or get the help that they need. But certainly a that was a very dense month of just August. That's, I can't imagine curating all that. So good on you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You're a great guide along with me walking through all that stuff. It's great to get other perspectives. So before I let you go, obviously want to give a chance for you to plug where people can follow you on social media, where people can obviously watch the different podcasts and experience all that is. Kate Elizabeth, the floor is yours.
Sure. So you can catch me on Fightful YouTube doing the AEW Rampage and SmackDown post show on Friday nights. Also on their main YouTube channel doing NXT Sour Graps on Tuesday nights. And behind the paywall at Fightful Select for various other shows, including pay-per-view review shows. We offer an alternative to what is on the main YouTube channel. Wednesday nights at the Mark Order Podcast The Mark Order Podcast, talking all things All Elite. I can't even plug myself. And at Miss Kate Fabe on Twitter as well.
Good stuff. Well, I appreciate the time. And yeah, it's always good to get new guests on. And yeah, it's been great getting to know you. Awesome insights. And look forward to having you on again in the future. Kate, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Big thanks to Kate Elizabeth, and thanks to all of you. I thought she was great. No big surprise there, but you never know until you talk to someone, and I thought she was awesome. So big thanks to her. And yeah, that was a fun month. Again, we have, compared to months past, we did a very heavy focus on AEW, of course, with all the Punk stuff. All that stuff is so fascinating, the behind-the-scenes stuff. And I think I tweeted this a while ago. I know I tweeted something to this effect, but when the book of AEW is written, in say the first 5 years or something like that, I think this stretch of August and September will be very interesting chapters for a lot of reasons. And I think we talked about some of this stuff, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight. August and especially September, definitely very interesting months when that book is someday written. So with all that, we are on to the final 4 months of the year: September, October, November, and December, in case you forgot what those 4 months were. And of course, the MMA Year in Review series will continue, returning this weekend with Paul Fontaine as we hit the second 3 months of the year. Those would be what? March, April, May. April, May, June. I can't read a calendar. April, May, and June. Paul and I will go over that. That should be out in just a couple days. And yeah, we're going to keep rolling until we get this thing done and wrapped over the next couple weeks. Been a fun ride, and grateful that all of you around with it. And of course, realizing last week in the July episode with John Alba, I completely forgot to mention my name or the show's name in the intro. So luckily, I crossed those off the list this time around. But we'll see you in a couple days. Until next time, again, this is Josh Nace's Punch-Out. Insert catchphrase here.